On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Time On with Sam McClure.
For Master Builders Training Victoria. Short courses now available. Visit mbavtraining.com.au. RTO 3935.
8 minutes past six. Welcome to Time On, Thursday edition, of course. And right on 24 hours away from footy finally resuming, another potential lockout, the season opener, of course. Season number two for AFLW, the old rivals Carlton and Collingwood do battle. And while we're still a number of weeks away from the AFL season starting, we have more clarity around how it will look, with new footy boss Steve Hocking declaring today it will make no changes to the rules. None. Nothing. Zip. Zilch. Zero. His predecessor, Simon Lethlean, of course, he made several changes last year. He banned the third man up rule. He also changed a deliberate rush behind interpretation, and he cracked down on ducking. So I want you to be in the driver's seat tonight. What would you change, or has Steve Hocking made the right call?
For God's sake, stop changing the rules and leave the game alone.
Settle down, KB, but what do you want? 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. Now, last night, I made you a promise, and Sharon has in fact delivered. We have another full leather match ball here from Sharon, the official game ball of AFLW. That is online tonight as a prize for the best caller. As we await your views on the news, let's check in with a man whose career is going from strength to strength. Former vice-captain, of course, of the Melbourne Footy Club, and now already in the leadership group at Collingwood. It's only been 1 year. Lyndon Dunn, welcome to Time On. We'll start off by asking, is there anything you would like Steve Hocking to change?
Not really. It's kind of refreshing to not have any changes this year. I think players in general get frustrated with some of the changes and that happen from year to year. And, from my first season to now, the game's changed a lot, and I'm a bit of a traditionalist, so it's kind of nice to keep the game the way it is.
So you're happy with all the little intricacies around, not going sideways on the mark or deliberate out of bounds, deliberate rush behind, if a player ducks or if they don't duck? You feel that any more change would just confuse players a bit more?
Yeah, I think so. It just gives players time to adjust and adapt to new rules. And, the rules are there for a reason. And, you need to adapt as a player to those changes. And it's just nice that for once we don't have to look at any further changes.
And last one on the rules, Lyndon. You might have read, it's been around since last year, but confirmed today that, Michael Christian and the MRP are going to be a lot more harsh on any punches thrown. Are you happy with that? Do you know where the line is with punches?
Yeah, well, I think we play footy for a reason, and players that want to punch either box or join the UFC, I think. So, it's pretty clear last year too with the jumper punches. It's a physical game. We want it to be physical and competitive, but there certainly has to be a line. And hopefully there's consistency with the punching and, players going, above the law. I think last year there was a few grey areas with a few incidents, but hopefully now that there's, the panel is more rigid and Michael's on there on his own, and hopefully it's black and white.
If you're just joining in to Time On, we've been joined by Collingwood star Lyndon Dunn. Lyndon, you're in the leadership group for 2018. I mentioned that off the top. You were discarded, for want of a better term, by Melbourne at the end of 2016, and you were at one stage a vice-captain of the club. What do you think it is about you that has clubs making you part of the leadership group, and, in Collingwood's case, so quickly after just one season?
Well, I suppose our leadership vote came from the playing group this year, so, to be recognised by my teammates as someone who is a leader and, I consider myself a leader, whether I'm in the leadership group or not. I feel that, I've been in the system long enough and, I know our game plan well. I like to feel that I know my teammates well. So, for the boys to look at me as a genuine leader is very humbling and something I never really thought would come around when I came to Collingwood. But, I just go about my business, the only way that I know, and it's just happened that, I found myself in the leadership group. So, it doesn't really change anything I do. It's more just a title, but, it's also nice to be recognised by your teammates in that way.
Some people, Lyndon, will be and already have been cynical. Kane Corn's been one of them of the size of leadership groups. I know that you guys have five. Carlton yesterday announced having eight, and
you know, the reigning premiers and the Tigers just have three, you know, captain and two vice captains. Is it just horses for courses and we shouldn't criticise unless we know what goes on within the four walls of a club?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, what happens at a footy club is often chalk and cheese to what's spoken about outside footy clubs. And, you know, even we went with the captain and two vice-captains early last year with the three players, and then Howie joined halfway during the season. And then this year we opted to just put a vote to the players again. And it's just so happened that there's only five of us. You know, if there is eight, if there's nine, if there's 12, I mean, I'm not sure that there is an exact number, but it's whatever works for the group for that season. And,
yep.
Yeah, I don't think you can actually put a specific number on it. So long as the leadership group, you know, are driving standards and you're getting from the group what you expect for the rest of the team, then that's important.
Righto, let's get into the big one tomorrow night. Carlton versus Collingwood. It was the inaugural game of AFLW last season. We know the lockout happened. Gillon McLachlan thinks it might happen again. And you're, of course, an assistant coach with Collingwood's AFLW team. It all gets underway tomorrow. What are you expecting, and have you got any team changes for us?
Yeah, well, we've done some restructuring, you know, in the off-season last year, and got a new coaching group, myself being one of them. Yeah, the girls are very excited, as you can imagine. The build-up over pre-season is often, it's grueling and tough, and there's moments where you question whether you actually want to be a football player, and everyone has those thoughts in their head, but when the time comes around for round one, everyone's excited. So, you know, we're expecting Carlton to come out firing. Both teams will want to start well. It'll be a full house again with our fingers crossed, and hopefully we can make amends for our poor effort in round one last year.
Have we got some team changes? Any debutants we should be looking out for?
Yes, we do have some players making their debut for the club. So we've got Chloe Malloy, Sarah Dargan, Eliza Hines, Jamie Lambert, and Billish Ross, one of my defenders. To have five new players at the club is great for us. You know, they've all been exceptional coming in and bought into the game plan and what the playing group, you know, want to be known as a side. So it's very nice for them to be recognised in round one. Hopefully they can play their roles and help us get a win.
Are you expecting an increased standard just in the league in general?
I think so, yeah. I think we saw a great base last year. I think from even round one to the grand final last year, there was a significant increase in gameplay and understanding from players at all clubs and the skill level. It's very exciting. We've got the touch out of bounds now, so the last team to touch the ball out of bounds will get the ball back. So hopefully that frees up the game and stops the stoppages a little bit more.
Hey, Lyndon, as we let you go, if we could just return to men's footy, which gets underway in a couple of months. A lot of the talk's been about Darcy Moore playing down back. You're a man that spent a bit of time at both ends. How's Darcy looking as a forward-turn defender?
Really well, yeah. Darcy's he's been training in the back line and, like you said, been spoken a lot about in the pre-season. But he's just, you know, whether he stays back for the whole year, for half a year, for the rest of his career, that remains to be seen. But I think all good forwards have probably spent time in the back line. And as a forward, sometimes learning your craft can be best done at the other end. I think a lot of great centre-half forwards have learned some of their skills down back. And, it gives them a different perspective on the game. It gives them appreciation for defending and using their minds in a different way. Darcy's a really competitive person, so and he's really agile and quick, and he's got all the attributes that we want in the modern-day footballer. So hopefully he can put those, you know, to the team's good use, and, we see him playing some ripping footy at centre-half back for the Pies.
Lyndon, great to chat. We look forward to seeing you in 2018, and good luck tomorrow night in the AFLW opener.
Cheers, Sam. Appreciate it, mate.
Lyndon Dunn there saying, just keep things as they are. You don't need to change it. It's hard enough for players as it is. But what about fans? Do you want things to change? The AFL reminder that they didn't change any rules. Steve Hocking, the new boss of footy, saying today that they wouldn't change anything. They changed quite a lot last year. 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. Remembering we have another official AFLW game ball. Full leather. These things are unbelievable. They went off like hotcakes yesterday. www.sharon.com.au if you want to get your hands on one. Mark joins us from Backers Marsh. Hello, Mark.
Good evening, everybody. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
That's good. Mate, honestly, this whole thing about changing rules and bringing new rules, which upsets people, I agree with. But there is nothing wrong with deleting or getting rid of a rule totally, especially one that was only brought in last year.
Oh, I know where you're going here, Mark.
Nominating a ruckman to have to take a throw-in or a bounce situation is the most ridiculous rule. Everybody complained across the board, and I'm advocating that the person at the AFL that thought about that one and actually implemented it, it's their ego is the reason why it hasn't been reversed. They don't want to get their little nose out of joint and be looked upon and everyone saying, well, great, mate, that rule you brought in 12 months ago, it's already gone. That was a good idea. No, that person does not want their ego to be hurt. Has to be.
Mark, appreciate your call. I think in fairness to the AFL, not trying to defend them, but in balancing up the argument, I think the AFL, change rules and take back rules based on what the feedback is they get from players and coaches and fans. I think that's one of the reasons they brought in the third man up rule, because a lot of ruckmen were complaining and they also thought that it would eventually make the ruckman obsolete. Appreciate your thoughts though, Mark. John joins us from Port Melbourne. Hello, John.
Hi, good evening all. How are we all going?
We're good.
Fantastic. Look, I couldn't have totally agreed more. No rule changes. Fantastic for the game. The only thing I like to see is give the umpires a bit more free rein. Let them umpire the game on their free spirit rather than being controlled like puppets out there, being told exactly how to go about it at every aspect of the game.
Appreciate your thoughts. John, you are in the running for the official AFLW game ball, the Sharon. Geez, they came for it last night, didn't they? And by the way, Mick in Perth, I think I promised you one at the end of the show. For your daughter Esme, we can find you one. Just call back before 7 o'clock, Mick in Perth, if you're listening. Again, 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. You're Steve Hocking. You're running the footy department at the AFL. Change rules. Leave them as they are. Best caller. Get your hands on the Sharon.
Not really. It's kind of refreshing to not have any changes this year. I think players in general get frustrated with some of the changes and that happen from year to year. And, for my first season to now, the game's changed a lot and I'm a bit of a traditionalist, so it's kind of nice to keep the game the way it is.
Welcome back to Time On, 27 minutes past 6. That was the voice of Lyndon Dunn. Just had a chat off the top and we asked him about rule changes and he said, keep the game as it is, stop making changes. Plenty of feedback, both on the calls, 9429 1116 and on the text, 0433 98 1116. Lots of feedback about the third man up rule. We've had a text here from Anonymous. One ruck up should be if a second person goes up, a free kick automatically awarded. Surely it's as simple as that. Let the team work it out themselves. Oh, he's left his name. Paul from Beaumaris. Well, Paul, I think the reason behind that, and I spent a fair bit of last year talking to different people who made this rule, I think the reason was if you do that, let's say Todd Goldstein, as an example, is about to go up, and then he doesn't. He stays down, and Sean Higgins comes over the top. North Melbourne can argue that Sean Higgins was always going to be the guy contesting that ruck rule. Now, I know that it's ridiculous, but sides find technicalities in rules, and I think that's what has caught the AFL out in this scenario. And now if they feel that if they take it back, teams will find even more holes and use technicalities on that. Hey, a recap on other things Steve Hocking addressed today. If you punch someone, you will be getting a fine or a suspension. Doesn't matter the type of impact or contact, you'll be getting a fine or a suspension from Michael Christian, regardless of the force. And there will be an appointment to replace Peter Schwab as head of umpiring in the next few weeks. That also came out of the press conference today. They have ruled out, by the way, a mid-season draft in 2018. Right, let's get to the calls. 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. We've got an official AFLW game ball on the line. You can head to Sharon if you want to get one, www.sharon.com.au. Keith in Spotswood, kick us off.
Yeah, g'day, Sammy. I just wanted to mention I've got a 10-year-old daughter, Ella, who's playing for Yarraville Seddon this year. So it'd be great if she could kick one of those Sharons around.
Absolutely.
I reckon I'm wrapped they haven't changed any of the rules, but there is one thing that I'd like them to tighten up. It's the incorrect disposal rule, where I think a lot of players are not disposing it properly. It hits the ground and the umpires call play on.
You remember, Keith, they introduced the interpretation to that rule, I reckon it was about 4 years ago, where even if you didn't dispose of the ball, if you got it and you were trying to get rid of it, and it was knocked out of your hand in the tackle, it was play on. That has seemed to go in and out of fashion on almost a fortnightly basis.
Yeah, absolutely. But I can remember, I still reckon it cost the Tigers against North Melbourne. I know we won the flag in the previous
time.
But absolutely, Ben Cunnington got tackled by, I reckon it was Titch Edwards, inside 50. All the players stopped, the ball hit the ground.
Yep.
North Belmont players picked it up, ran it down the ground and kicked the goal. And that was absolutely incorrect disposal, and it should have been called that way.
Well, if there's one thing we've learnt from Keith, it is that footy fans have long memories. Good on you, Keith. You and your daughter Ella in the running for the Sharon. Thomas in Point Cook. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you, mate.
I just wanted to touch on how last year they made the big thing about the out of bounds and making it a deterrent, so they tried to play more down the middle.
Yep.
Well, I thought maybe follow along the lines of the AFLW. Mm. So that way the umpires don't get crucified by the fans. It's clearly last touch is out. It's not down to interpretation. So players and fans alike aren't getting mixed up with what is a deliberate and what's not a deliberate out of bounds. Mm. Rather than it's off fingers or off whoever, and they know exactly, get it back in play faster and get a free moving game.
Yeah, Thomas, it's an extreme way to look at it. This is one of the things that is a bit of a bugbear of mine, and I don't have many in the AFL, and I'm reasonably strong on this topic. I have no idea why the deliberate out-of-bounds rule has become the way it is. Who decided 100 years after the game started that we couldn't use the boundary line? Now, if you want to make it that, you know, turning perpendicular and kicking along the ground towards the boundary just to save time, deliberate, fine. But if you're going to change the rule to you have to actually make an attempt to keep it in, who decided that the boundary wasn't your friend at some point 100 years down the track? It hasn't been discussed, and it frustrates me to no end, but we digress. Stephen in Brown Hill wants to talk about marking contests. Hello, Stephen.
G'day, how are you?
We're good. It sounds like there's either roadworks or a chainsaw starting in the near vicinity.
Yeah, a bit of roadworks going on. Okay. I just want to talk about marking contests and specifically incidents where the ball might be flying, say, 10 metres over a player's head, but they get a little tug of the jumper or a little push in the back that's not dangerous, but the umpires always call it. I'd like to see them get a bit more of freedom with their interpretation. If they know the player wasn't impacted on getting the ball, then, and it's not dangerous, then I don't think it should be a free kick. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I think this is actually one of the really tough ones for the umpires, Stephen, because if they see a pull of the jumper, then automatically, it pricks in their head that there's been a hold and that they have to pay a free kick. And if they get a little nudge in the back, which takes someone under the ball, then that has to be a free kick. So I think it's one of the tougher things. I think you made a really good point. Nick is in Strathmore. What's to talk interchange? Hello, Nick.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
Good, mate.
I was sitting here and I was going to say I don't want any changes, but when I think to myself I want clarity,
yeah,
I suppose it's always means changes. I'd like to see the prior opportunity. If a player handballs to another player, he has to either handball or kick to dispose. It has to be, can't be any other way. Prior opportunity is gone. So once you've given your first pass off, that's your prior opportunity for the team. It should be a team prior opportunity.
Yep.
Not because you can't really handball to somebody who's in a worse position you just to get rid of it. Because then it's just a tackle and a scrimmage. It's just not fair.
So the bloke who gets tackled and doesn't have prior opportunity, it's just bad luck and it's his teammate's fault.
Luck, yeah. Okay. Really, the first person's the one who should be getting rid of the ball and putting it into the clean air.
Yeah, team prior opportunity. It's an interesting one. Is the game ready for it? I'm not sure, and I don't think players would like it, but that's just a gut feel. Chris, in Roxburgh Park, we might make you the last.
Hey, how you going, buddy?
Good, thank you, mate.
Yeah, I'm really happy that they haven't changed the rules because I know that players and supporters just get sick of rule changes all the time. But if they were going to change one, I'd like to see them. You know those when a player gets the ball and he hits the deck and he does those little rabbit punches like he's pretending to try and get rid of the ball?
Yep.
I'd go, nah, you're insulting the intelligence, mate, free kick.
Yeah. But it's a hard one, Chris, because the umpires come out and say, we specifically want you to make an effort and look like you're making an effort. So, I mean, they're probably trained to a degree to do that.
Yeah, but if they can do that, if they can actually do that, then surely they can actually get it out.
Unless their other arm is pinned.
Yeah, well,
this is why our game is so damn hard. I mean, we're sitting here talking about rule interpretations and what you would change. And, it's one thing to talk about what rules you would change. it's a very different thing to then hand it to the umpires and say, you guys go adjudicate. It is the hardest game in the world to umpire. There's no doubt in my mind about that. By the way, Steve Hocking will join Gary and Tim tomorrow after 7 o'clock in the morning. So make sure you are tuned in to 11.16 SEN. Tim and Gary going along beautifully. I think we might give the share in to Keith in Spotswood. He was the one that talked about prior opportunity. And obviously, little Ella, his 7-year-old, can get a good use out of the footy. We'll get that to you, Keith. Make sure you ring back 9429 1116. As we go to the break, Davis Cup captain, as we turn to tennis, Leighton Hewitt today announcing that Nick Kyrgios and teenage sensation Alex de Minaur will contest tomorrow's singles rubber against Germany. De Minaur to take on the world number 5, Alexander Zverev. But he said today he's not daunted.
I think it's a great opportunity for me. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm just going to go out there like it's just another match and leave it all out there on court. Obviously, he's a favourite, but, you know, I'm going to come out there and leave it all out there. Put everything on the line and, you know, try to do everything I can. Yeah, I wasn't expecting any of this, but it's really a dream come true. You know, I don't think there's a greater honour than representing your country, so I'm very proud of this moment and, you know, I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, all the talk's been about Bernard Tomic in the jungle, but great to see Alex de Minaur, who is just... Well, he's a breath of fresh air and representing his country for the first time tomorrow against Germany.
I go to the World Cup to with only one thing. What counts is to survive the first round. And nobody has to tell me that's difficult because our opponents are good countries. But for me, at this moment, there's only one thing that counts, and it's the first game. I'm a realistic coach, and I like creative football. I like to have the ball, but I also like to win, and that's the most important thing. And I think it's important that we play in a way that fits the players, and also the coach. You cannot play in a way that the players cannot do, and when they don't like to play in a way you want to play, then you make a mistake, I think. I have respect for the former coach, and I will do it, and I do it on my way.
Well, another significant day in Australian football. Bert van Marwijk, the new coach, the replacement to Ange Postecoglou, giving his first media conference since being announced as coach. The man who sits right beside him, Luke Casley, the head of national performance, who was also that under Ange Postecoglou, has been good enough to join us here on Time On. Luke, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
Luke, can we just start off with a little bit of housekeeping? Bert van Marwijk, correct? Incorrect?
We actually had a decent discussion about that this morning. So it's along those lines, but he understands that all the English-speaking countries pronounce it Van Marwijk, and he's happy with that.
Right, okay. So Van Marwijk, Van Marwijk, somewhere there or in between is okay. Look, let's start off with your position in all of this. You've been the head of national performance since 2013, a very similar time when Ange Postecoglou took over. What is your feeling now, you know, only 4 to 5 months away from a World Cup, the brand new coach at the helm? How are we placed?
Yeah, look, I'm really pleased. Like, well, you know, obviously the original plan was that Ange Postecoglou would take us to a World Cup, but, you know, we were put in the situation out of our hands and, you know, we started the process to hunt for a new coach. And throughout that, our short-term focus was very much on the World Cup. And, you know, I think we're pretty fortunate. It's not every day that, you know, you're signing a coach or having a coach come on board that's taken a team to a World Cup final. So, yeah, we're really delighted and pleased that Bert agreed to join us.
And, Luke, are you comfortable that, as it stands now, it's a short-term appointment, that we're not looking beyond the World Cup?
Yeah, we are. So, as far as Bert's concerned, that's very much our focus. You know, when you go through a full cycle and you talk about long-term, the end of that long-term, where you want to be is to be able to put your best foot forward at the World Cup. That's what the long-term, you know, in Socceroos or senior national team level is all about. So we really wanted to finish off this cycle and give, you know, the players and the staff and our fans every chance to succeed at this World Cup, and that's why we went for Bert. And we are working concurrently in the background with a longer-term appointment post-World Cup. So we'll do everything we can to make that transition as smooth as possible. Hopefully have that coach in place before the World Cup so that they can be there, see the training session, see the team perform, and in a short space of time get ready for an Asian Cup defence in the UAE.
Sorry, Luke, just on that to confirm, you want to decide on someone by the time we actually play our first World Cup game?
Absolutely.
And that will be announced or they'll just be in the background?
I believe that CEO will decide that, but I expect that will be announced.
Right, okay. So as we start our campaign in Russia in our first group game, we believe that we'll have a replacement to Bert van Marwijk, at least known to the public. Can I just ask you on that, Luke? I think a lot of people, whether you follow football closely or whether you are just someone that watches the main tournaments like a World Cup, I think a lot of Australians will just want to know how we're going to play, what kind of team we'll look like. And Van Marwijk did say today, whilst he has full respect and appreciation of what Postecoglou has done, he wants to do things his way. Tell us, Luke, what is Bert van Marwijk's way?
Yeah, look, there's been a little bit of talk about that. For me, when we went through this process, we had a fair bit of analysis done on a number of coaches, how their teams have performed. One of the things that stood out with Bert van Marwijk was his record and ability to have an instant, you know, positive response, positive performance and results in a short space of time with the teams that he's worked with. Given the nature of this project and the short-term nature of it, that was really important. But, you know, for all the talk and conjecture about style and way of play, probably the biggest reference point for me was if you look at the way Saudi Arabia played under their former coach at the Asian Cup in 2015, and then you look at the way Saudi's played under Bert van Marwijk against us, I think that gives us a fair indication of the type of football that he likes to play. And, you know, particularly the, you know, away in Jeddah in the first half in South Australia, in Adelaide against us, you know, their ball retention and particularly their speed in transition was pretty impressive. So, for all the people that are talking about style and the way of play, I think if anyone just goes back and look at the way the Saudis played against us, we'll probably give you the best answer on how Bert van Marwijk's teams play.
Heading to Tim Cahill as we finish off, Luke. He's signing with Millwall, I think, raised a few eyebrows at the age of 38. Was it, or is it your opinion or the Socceroos' opinion that he needed to find somewhere to play, to have minutes under his belt, to make sure that he is ready for a World Cup, that he couldn't just go the next 4 months without really playing and expect to be picked?
Yeah, I think that's front of everyone's mind. You want to have match minutes, you want to be playing, and you want to be informed to go to a World Cup. I don't think Tim would be any different.
And just lastly, as we let you go, Luke, can you give us an insight into what Bert is like as a person? You picked him up at the airport today. What have you made of him thus far?
Yeah, obviously I don't know him too well, but in the discussions that I've had with him and the meetings that I've had, he's got a good balance of both. He's very focused, very professional, very to the point. But then you see him around a couple of his staff members, and I guess as all ex-footballers are, they're pretty quick with the wit and enjoy a little bit of banter as well. So no, he all seems good at this stage, and we really look forward to getting down to work and preparing for Russia.
Yeah, and that we are looking forward to as well. It's not long away. In fact, it's probably closer than a lot of people think. It's only the best part of 4 months away. Russia, we look forward to the campaign, particularly the Socceroos one. Luke, we appreciate your time. Good luck in preparation over the next few months.
No worries. Pleasure. Thank you.
Luke Cashley there, the head of the FFA National Performance. Interesting that we'll have Van Marwijk's replacement appointed before the World Cup and maybe sitting only a few rows behind him in Russia. That is odd. Up next, the Renegades. Well, they've got every right, I reckon, to be upset heading in tomorrow night's semi-final against the Strikers in the Big Bash. Sam Landsberger from the Herald Sun, the guru from the Herald Sun, will tell us why next. This is Time On for Master Builders Training Victoria. Short course is now available. Visit mbavtraining.com.au. You're about to be joined by another Sam because it's all happening in the Big Bash. We know it's semi-final time, but sometimes it feels like in sport, rules are made up on the run. Sam Landsberger, Herald Sun journalist covering the Big Bash, one of the gurus of the Big Bash, joins us. Hello, Sammy.
Hello, Sammy. Pleasure to chat to you.
Pleasure to have you on. Sam, talk to us about this decision by Cricket Australia to allow Travis Head to play in the semi-final for the Adelaide Strikers against the Melbourne Renegades.
Sammy, let's not beat around the bush. I don't like it. I think this stinks. Cricket Australia said to me on Monday night that the 15 players in Australia's T20 squad would not be playing any Big Bash. They said, we've got to improve our world ranking in the T20 competition. We need our squad around for the whole series. Bad luck. If you've got players selected, you don't have them for the finals. The backflip today, Trevor said we get told won't play at the MCG on Saturday night. Sorry, not at the MCG, but in the first game. No worries. He shouldn't be playing for the Adelaide Strikers. 3 weeks ago, Cameron White got told he's not playing in the first ODI, but he still couldn't play in the Derby 2 days earlier. So it is rules on the run. The Renegades are without Aaron Finch and Cam Richardson, and I think they're pretty stiff. And it changes the complexion of the semi-final. I mean, Big Bash is about how many match winners you can have, how many players can turn a game on its head, to use a pun there. And Travis said there's certainly one player who can do that. He's got great form against the Renegades. I think he's been man of the match or close to the past 3 times he's played them. So, yeah, this is a very, very big in for a very important game.
And particularly when the Strikers also have Billy Stanlake and Alex Carey, that they haven't been released, and they're citing exceptional circumstances for Travis Head. I think the word you used is right, Sam. It stinks. I mean, if you were the Melbourne Renegades, you might not do it now, but when the season's done and dusted, you'd be writing a pretty stern please explain, would you not?
Yeah, and it happened 2 years ago to the Melbourne Stars. They played the Sydney Thunder in the grand final, and I think they had Hastings, Boland, Maxwell and James Faulkner locked away in Cricket Australia's camp. Right before the final, they released Usman Khawaja to play for the Thunder. Khawaja makes a match-winning 70, and the Thunder get home and they lift the trophy.
No, it doesn't make sense, Sam. But surely there's a hard and fast rule that they can just make, can't they?
Look, I think from a fan's point of view, and the Big Bash does have rusted on fans there who are pretty passionate about it. They just want consistency. So give us one set of rules and use them for the same, you know, for every week of the tournament, for every summer. So I think if we all knew what the state of play was, there'd be less anger. But, I mean, the Renegades all week have been planning to face the Strikers without Travis Head. Now they've got to rejig their bowling plans and whatnot. They've got to, you know, find a matchup to try and get rid of him tomorrow night. It changes the complexion of the game. They shouldn't be dealing with that 24 hours out of their first semi-final in 5 years.
No, 100% agree. Sam Landsberger from the Herald Sun, as we let you go, can you give us some tips in the semis and who's going to win the whole thing?
Very confident in the Scorchers tonight. They look really strong with the Marsh brothers back, so I think they will win the whole thing. And I've gone with the Strikers tomorrow night, so I think it'll be a Perth-Adelaide final. Expecting Perth to beat the Strikers for the third time this season on Sunday night.
Yeah, knowing the Renegades' luck, Travis Head to make 100. Sam, Sam, we appreciate your time. Love your coverage of the Big Bash and also the AFL. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime. Cheers, Sam.
Sam Landsberger there from the Herald Sun.